Sask Ag Today with Doug Faulkner.
Good afternoon and welcome to Sask Ag Today. Coming up on today's program, Saskatchewan's Water Security Agency has issued the spring runoff forecast for 2024. We'll hear from President and CEO Sean Jakes. And of course, that latest dump of snow we received last week has helped conditions across much of the province. There was a lack of Saskatchewan feeder, steer, and heifer prices in the cattle market update for the week ending Friday, March 8th. Livestock intern at the Ministry of Agriculture, Emily Taylor, will tell us about that. For Canadian livestock producers, it brings back memories of U.S. mandatory country of origin labeling introduced more than 15 years ago. The United States is calling for a product of U.S. label, and we will have reaction to that from Dennis Laycraft of the Canadian Cattle Association. And the Saskatchewan Association of Rural Municipalities is getting ready for this week's convention in Regina. We'll hear from President Ray Orb. All of those stories and much more coming up on today's edition of Sask Ag Today. But first, it's time for the Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather. And that's a presentation of Milligan Bio. Milligan Bio now offers BioMeal for your livestock, giving your animals more protein, more energy, and more of what they need. It's also brought to you by Sean Prahitka, your REMAX Blue Chip Ag Division Specialist.
Beef and Forage Report.
There was a lack of Saskatchewan feeder, steer, and heifer prices in the cattle market update for the week ending March 8th. Livestock intern at the Ministry of Agriculture, Emily Taylor, explains why.
There were limited marketings last week due to the snowstorm, which resulted in highway closures and auction cancellations.
There was, however, information on how many cattle were marketed in the province last week.
There were 3,547 Saskatchewan feeder cattle marketed over the week ending March 8th. This is down compared to the 7,777 head marketed the previous week.
Prices for Alberta cows were available and were up compared to the previous week.
Prices of Alberta cows on March 8th were up over the previous week. D2 cows averaged $157.50 per hundredweight, up $8.57 over the previous week, while the price of D3 cows was up $9.95 from the previous week to average $140.20 per hundredweight. The CanFax price for Alberta-fed steers on the week ending March 8th was $232.97 per hundredweight, slightly below the price of $233.38, which was reported on March 1st. Despite the lack of data for Saskatchewan, prices for Western Canadian feeder calves have been strong. For the week ending March 8th, Alberta saw stronger feeder heifer prices for all but one of the reported weight categories. The price of lightweight feeder steers declined, while the price of heavier steers improved from the week prior.
And Taylor is optimistic there will be cattle prices to share in next week's cattle market update. And that's today's Beef and Forage Report. It's time now for the Ag Review portion of our program, and that's a presentation of New Era Ag Technologies in Swan River.
GX94, Ag Review.
Farmland is still getting more expensive, but not quite as quickly as in recent years. That's according to the latest farmland value report from Canada's biggest agricultural lender. Farm Credit Canada put average national farmland value growth in 2023 at 11.5%, down from 12.8% in 2022. FCC Chief Economist J.P. Gervais notes we had three consecutive years of land values climbing. Given global geopolitical events, which have led to significant market volatility in the last few years, Gervais was expecting even more of a pullback. The highest average provincial increases in farmland values were found in Saskatchewan, Quebec, and Manitoba, with increases of 15.7%, 13.3%, and 11.1%, respectively. That's up from 14.2%, 11 and 11.2% respectively in 2022. While much of the prairies received above normal amounts of precipitation during the month of February, the additional moisture did little to alleviate dry conditions. That's according to Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada's Canadian Drought Monitor. With the exception of the northeast corner of Manitoba, the entire prairie region was considered to be abnormally dry or worse, including the whole agricultural landscape. All three provinces in the prairies had areas of extreme drought, while parts of southeastern Alberta were under exceptional drought. By comparison, only 60% of the prairies and 78% of agricultural areas were abnormally dry at the same time last year. Only the Peace River region in Alberta and parts of southern Manitoba received less than normal amounts of precipitation. However, long-term precipitation deficits, poor water supplies, and a small snowpack hindered relief. The net speculative short position in canola continued to rise in the first trading days of March. That's according to the latest Commitments of Traders report from the United States Commodity Futures Trading Commission. As of March 5, 2024, the net managed money short position in canola futures came in at 153,833 contracts, which was up by roughly 3,800 contracts from the previous week and a new record. Open interest in the canola market was up by 12,307 contracts on the week at 303,516 contracts. At the Chicago Board of Trade, the net short position in soybeans increased by about 9,000 contracts on the week to hit its highest level in nearly 5 years at around 160,300 contracts. Tyson Foods will permanently close a pork plant in Perry, Iowa, eliminating jobs for about 1,200 workers. The company, which reaped big profits as meat prices soared during the COVID-19 pandemic, has since confronted a decline and slowing demand for some products. Tyson has announced the closures of 6 U.S. chicken plants in about the past year and also laid off corporate employees. Tyson's pork business had an adjusted operating loss of $128 million in the fiscal year that ended on September 30th, down from income of $198 million in the previous year. Its sales volumes fell 2.2%, while average prices slid 7.9%. The plant in Perry slaughters about 9,000 pigs per day. That accounts for a little less than 2% of total U.S. pork production. Vineyards at the heart of British Columbia's wine industry are reeling after 2 years of climate-related crop losses. A cold snap in January appears to have almost completely wiped out this year's vintage. A February report from Wine Growers BC estimates a harvest of only 1 to 3% of normal levels and revenue losses of up to $346 million for vineyards and wineries. The organization's president, Miles Proden, says there is worry and even panic in the industry, given the steady decline of grape harvests in recent years. And the commissioner of the Canadian Grain Commission says he intends to retire from the role next month when his appointment extension wraps up. In a message to grain sector stakeholders, Doug Chorney says he was humbled and honored to have the opportunity to serve in the role, calling it the highlight of his professional career. He also recalled major drought, the COVID-19 pandemic, and through one of the largest strikes in Canada's history, as some notable events he led the Grain Commission through. Chorney's last day is April 30th. Chorney initially joined the Grain Commission as Assistant Chief Commissioner in 2017 and has been the Chief Commissioner for the last 3 years. And SaskAg Today is always available on podcast. Listen to past shows whenever you want. Find them easily by going to gx94radio.com. Also, you can hear the podcast on your Amazon Echo. Just enable the GX94 skill and choose SaskAg Today. And yes, it's free. That's today's Ag Review. Please stay tuned. SaskAg Today will continue right after these messages. Welcome back to SaskAg Today. I'm Doug Falconer. We have mist and minus 5 degrees in the Yorkton-Melville region. I'll have your complete weather details coming up at the top of the hour. The Saskatchewan Association of Rural Municipalities, or SARM, is almost done preparing for this week's convention in Regina. It kicks off tomorrow, and SARM President Ray Orb says the agenda is jam-packed with appearances from provincial cabinet ministers, guest speakers, and more.
We've got, of course, a bear pit, you know, with the provincial cabinet ministers and the premier. It's kind of like, I think, the highlight of our convention. I'll also have a dialogue session with the ministers that SARM, you know, mostly deals with, like kind of the issues that are covered off with those ministers. Our delegates will have a chance to get into a smaller room and to be able to direct questions to them and to the staff and hopefully get the answers and the information they want. But yeah, we have a busy trade show. Our trade show is actually sold out. We've got a huge trade show. And, you know, it's open to the general public as well. So we expect a lot of people to be coming into that trade show and our guests that are registered and our delegates coming into the main convention as well.
He expects at least 2,000 delegates this week.
Yeah, historically, we do get close to 2,000. We've had over 2,000 in the past, and I suspect this wouldn't be any different, barring any adverse weather. It looks like we may have some unsettled weather coming in later tonight or tomorrow morning, but I think we should have a pretty good turnout, and we're pretty excited about that.
Orb says they have a number of resolutions to debate this week.
Yeah, we have about 27 resolutions. It's a wide range, I think, of topics. Some on health care, some on rural crime as well, which are probably the two most important issues right now to our rural members. Also, some on agriculture in particular, predation, predation programs. Our members are a little bit concerned about that. We'll probably have some discussion in our bear pit as well about the livestock issues, probably drought. People are still watching the situation with the drought. We've had, of course, some general snowfall, but I think the general feeling is we'd like to have a little bit more closer to spring and maybe, some timely rains as well. We've got issues coming up, for discussion in particular, I guess, road programs, road construction, bridge construction, and generally our members are looking for some changes to those programs. Also, we're looking for more funding as well. So that's something that I'm going to be talking about tomorrow morning, actually, addressing our delegates first thing tomorrow morning.
He then previews the contents of tomorrow's speech.
I'm going to focus on, I think, the importance of rural Saskatchewan, what our contributions are, not only to the provincial GDP, but to the national GDP as well, but making reference to some of the issues on healthcare and policing, some of the things that we've been hearing from the province as well. And generally, I think kind of laying out a bit of the agenda for our convention. And I think the kind of the theme is collaboration. That's working together among our membership and also working with the province and, with the federal government as much as we can, although sometimes that relationship is being tested more all the time. But however, I think optimistically, we're looking for a good turnout and good discussion at our convention.
And Orb notes they also have some guest speakers lined up.
Yes, that's right. We have a lady by the name of Merle Massey. She's going to be talking about some of her experiences as a farmer, as a farm operator, and so we're looking forward to that. We've got some more like education sessions, some of the leadership as well, which is important. Also, as a speaker that's going to be talking about attracting and retaining municipal elected officials, which is, it is a challenge for us in some areas of the province to be able to get more people interested in municipal politics. The convention will be live streamed, so that will be out there in the general public. And, we're hoping that many people in the public can take some time, if they are interested in becoming municipal elected official. This is the convention.
That's SARM President Ray Orb. We'll have more of what's on tap at the SARM convention coming up tomorrow.
Livestock market conditions.
U.S. live cattle futures for April are trading at 188.25. That's up 65. June live cattle closed at 183.95, up 92. April feeder cattle closed at 254.12, up 102. May feeder cattle closed at 256.70, up 132. April lean hogs closed at 85.35, up 207. May lean hogs closed at 92.20, up 160. And that's the livestock market conditions. For Canadian livestock producers, it brings back memories of U.S. mandatory country of origin labeling introduced more than 15 years ago. Under mandatory cool, live Canadian cattle and hogs had to be segregated prior to processing, creating extra costs and lower prices for Canadian producers. Mandatory cool was struck down by the World Trade Organization about a decade ago, but something that could be very similar may be on its way in 2026. It's called the Product of U.S. label, and this is U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack speaking at a National Farmers Union convention in Arizona yesterday.
We are now on record as being for the utilization of that label only when the animal is born, raised, slaughtered, and processed in the U.S.
To provide some additional background on the Product of U.S. label, here's Dennis Laycraft, the Executive Vice President of the Canadian Cattle Association.
It was almost a year ago, the USDA and Secretary Vilsack down there proposed a new rule that would establish a new definition for Product of USA, and it's meant to be a voluntary label. And what really started this conversation was there was some product in a few markets in the U.S. where I think it had come out of Central America, and they just kind of cut it into steaks and sold it as a Product of USA. So they wanted to tighten the rules so that, you know, people weren't just bringing in beef and, you know, simply putting it into a retail pack and selling it as U.S. product, which would have been fairly easy to fix. But instead, they brought out a really prescriptive and restrictive definition on Product of USA, which was proposed to be born, raised, slaughtered, and processed in the U.S. And they went through a comment period, and after the, which we did submit comments to, but proposing a definition that would be more appropriate in an integrated market environment like we have under the Canada-U.S.-Mexico agreement. But they chose to keep with this same definition, and that was announced yesterday that this is now a final rule and it will come into effect in 2026.
He says this isn't much different than mandatory country of origin labeling the U.S. introduced 15 years ago.
Yeah, that's really, you know, the most important question. Now, they'll say it's voluntary, but I think the real question is how widely does it get adopted in the United States? And if it becomes a condition of trade and most people are following it, and for instance, they recently announced some of their government procurement programs for some of their food purchases will have to follow this definition. So does it effectively become a de facto mandatory? And if it does, and it starts to lead to segregation and unfair discrimination against imported cattle and pigs, then we're kind of back into the same boat. But, you know, we do have the potential. We have retaliation rights if they were to bring back in force a measure that basically resulted in the same market distortions that occurred under the previous rule.
But Laycraft says they would rather not see a return to the World Trade Organization dispute settlement process again.
We'd like to avoid it, first of all, because the North American market is, you know, it's beneficial for producers in all three countries. We've got the largest two-way between trade in live cattle and beef in the world between Canada and the U.S., and it's beneficial in both directions. But So it will take a while to see how this rule impacts and how widely it actually gets adopted. There are some who believe that it's so going to be so difficult to meet that, and restrictive to meet, that it likely won't get used extensively, but only time will tell on that.
He notes this goes beyond beef and pork.
Yeah, pretty much everything that's going to bear a product of USA in the food industry. So, yeah, certainly a much wider scope. And, for instance, their previous measure didn't have and processed in the U.S., so it would cover, you know, even more, in our industry, more beef products than was covered under the previous rule. So,
Laycraft is worried that the U.S. presidential campaign could see both parties touting protectionist policies.
Yeah, we're seeing kind of a similar theme. We're hearing from both kind of that Buy America First conversation. And you know, we're going to be spending a lot of time visiting with a lot of good friends we have in the United States. And you know, our government is as well. I think a lot of the real benefits of the market integration and the North American market sometimes don't get enough attention. And we're going to be talking about, you know, how much we all benefit from it and try and change that conversation. So, you know, many years the largest customer in the world for U.S. agri-food products. It kind of goes between us and China, but you know, when you have 40 million people buying as much as 1.4 billion and we live next door and we have one of the most trusted relationships in the world, the value of our market and our relationship is something that I think often gets lost when you get into campaigns, and we need to make sure it's at least part of the conversation down there.
He notes that the announcement was made yesterday at an American National Farmers Union meeting.
You know, there's kind of a number of different camps down there. You know, as you likely, we work closely with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, which is by far the largest and mainstream organization, and many of their affiliates at the provincial or at the state level. I mean, and you know, they're really market oriented, and they, you know, recognize the benefits of the North American marketplace itself and the supply chains. There are some other groups that are a lot more regional in their approach, and you know, we've had some history with groups like RCAF, which really are really trying to obstruct trade as part of their mandate. So you do get different groups that have different philosophies down there, but you know, again, we're working with a lot of the more significant groups in the United States, and it's not just in the beef industry. We have good relations with a lot of commodities down there that we meet with regularly.
And Laycraft has these final comments.
It's going to be a while till this comes into effect, but you know, we'll be watching it closely and trying to gauge if there are any negative impacts for the marketplace up here.
Dennis Laycraft is the Executive Vice President of the Canadian Cattle Association. The CCA says it will be monitoring closely any segregation of cattle in the United States. Under the 2015 World Trade Organization ruling, Canada and Mexico can retaliate against a measure that unfairly discriminates against imports of live cattle and pigs. Please stay tuned. Your commodities update is coming up next.
Commodities update.
Canola futures closed up across the board today. May canola closed at $627.70, up $12 per metric ton. July canola closed at $636 per metric ton, up $12.70. May Minneapolis wheat closed at $6.72 per bushel, up 2 cents. May Kansas City wheat closed at $5.97 and a quarter, down 1.5 cents. May Chicago wheat closed at $5.47 and a half, up a quarter of a cent. May corn closed at $4.41 and three quarters, unchanged. May soybeans closed at $11.96 per bushel, up 16¾ cents. May oats closed at 372¾. That's up 2 cents. And that's the commodities update. Seeding may be a few more months away in Saskatchewan, but now is a good time to raise awareness of being safe on the farm. The Saskatchewan government declared this week Agriculture Safety Week as part of a national campaign of the same name. The Canadian Agriculture Safety Association, or CASA, is heavily involved in Ag Safety Week, and their Director of Programs and Communications, Robin Anderson, tells us what they're going to do.
Every year we put out a media kit which folks are welcome to go and read and share and use. We also have resources that people can use and share as well on the website. The ribbon campaign is that the biggest thing that we do throughout the country. We are small, not-for-profit, so we really depend on our partners on the ground to help with local events and local things. But folks can absolutely go online, order ribbons. The physical ribbons are free, and have them shipped out to them. And, you know, farm safety isn't just about 1 week, it's about all year round. So if there's clubs or organizations, events that would like to order some ribbons, please do so. We also have the online ribbon that people can share on social just to talk about why farm safety is important to them.
This year's theme is Your Farm, Your Family, Your Success. Safety is our heritage.
We know that most farms in Canada are family operations. You know, they can be corporations as well, but most are still owned by farm families. And that depends on, you know, being able to pass that farm down to the next generation. So having a safe farm ensures your heritage of the farm. We all know, unfortunately, that the death of the primary operator often leads to farms not being viable anymore, and they go under. So we want to make sure that everybody's safe on the farm. So that's a primary operator, farm families, farm kids, farm workers, and people in the community. Just to keep those operations healthy, successful, and viable for the future.
She says farm safety isn't limited to farmers, as this week also applies to people living in more urban areas.
It's also about community members and the general public that might be out, that might encounter, you know, farm equipment on the roads, right? Taking our time, slowing down, you know, watching for those hazards, because it's up to all of us to ensure the safety of everybody on the roads. And, you know, protecting those folks that work really, really hard to provide food for everybody.
And people can get involved with Ag Safety Week on social media.
Yeah, we love everybody to use the hashtag Farm Safety Every Day and join in that conversation about what you do to keep your farm, your family, and your community safe and healthy.
Information about farm safety, including access to the Farm Safety Guide, is available at saskatchewan.ca/farmsafety. Please stay tuned. SaskAg Today will continue right after these messages. Welcome back to SaskAg Today. I'm Doug Falconer. Much like January, February was warmer than normal, but had more precipitation. Meteorologist at Environment Canada, Natalie Hazel, says some areas got more than others.
Some of the places that we have precipitation data for, also quite dry in some places, although we do have Regina, which is surprisingly wet. and Swift Current, too, actually is kind of wet. So a number of places, a lot of variability with the precipitation, I would say. It kind of depends where you are in the province. The place with the least precipitation compared to normal is Key Lake at 37%, which brings us to the seventh driest, and the place with the highest percentage compared to normal, as I was mentioning, is Regina at 165%, but this is not record in any way. This is actually just the 36th wettest out of 136 years.
Regina recorded 15.5 millimeters of precipitation last month, and Swift Current 13.3 millimeters, both above normal. Estevan, Moose Jaw, North Battleford, Saskatoon, and Yorkton also got more precipitation than normal, though it wasn't enough to crack the top 10 wettest months. Hazel says 2024 has been a weird year for precipitation so far.
A lot of times we've had precipitation and then it was either falling as rain, so it didn't really stick around for anyone, or if it snowed, then you know, the very warm temperatures that we saw allowed this snow to melt, and then the space between weather events allowed the snow, if there was still snow, to sublimate. So on numerous occasions, you know, we've just ended up with ice on the roads or no snow, no ice at all, repeatedly. So it's like this year we haven't really had a chance to accumulate a whole lot of snow from one month to the next, except maybe for in the southeastern corner, because there was that system that came through towards the end of February and then the beginning of March.
Many Environment Canada weather stations in Saskatchewan recorded temperatures above seasonal norms. Regina had a mean temperature of minus 7.5 degrees, 4.2 degrees warmer than normal, making it the ninth warmest month on record. Saskatoon was 3.7 degrees warmer than usual, Yorkton 4.7 degrees warmer, Prince Albert 5.1 degrees warmer, North Battleford 3.6 degrees warmer, and Swift Current 2.3 degrees warmer.
Farm Bulletin Board.
Just a reminder that the Saskatchewan Stock Growers Association is holding their Zone 2 annual meeting on Wednesday, March 20th in Weyburn. And that's all the time we have for today's Farm Bulletin Board. It's now 1 o'clock in Saskatchewan, 2 o'clock in Manitoba. Time to check the GX94 Precision Weather Forecast. For the Quill Lakes, Hudson Bay, Swan River, Broadview, Moosom, and Indian Head, and Yorkton, Melville, Roblin, Russell regions today, mainly cloudy, winds east-northeast at 10 to 20, and a high of plus 1 degree. For tonight, an 80% chance of developing snow, 3 to 6 centimeters possible, winds east at 10 to 20, a low steady near minus 1. For tomorrow, a 70% chance of light snow tapering off as the day goes on, winds north-northeast at 15 to 25, a high of 0, an overnight low of minus 8. For Thursday, a mix of sun and cloud, winds northwest at 10 to 20, a high of minus 1. For Friday, partly to mainly cloudy, a high of plus 3, and Saturday, mainly cloudy with a 30% chance of isolated flurries, a high of minus 2. In the Paw, it's minus 2 degrees, Swan River plus 1, Dauphin plus 2, Brandon minus 1, Show Lake Russell 0, Roblin minus 3. Regina, Hudson Bay, Broadview, Moosomin, and Indian Head all reporting in at plus 2. Saskatoon minus 4, Wynyard, Wadena, Kelvington plus 1. The Yorkton Melville region has some mist, calm conditions, 95% is the relative humidity, the temperature is minus 5 degrees. That's your agriculture weather, and that'll do it for SaskAg Today for today. Be sure to tune in again tomorrow at 12:15 Saskatchewan time for another edition of the program. It's time now for the news and sports headlines.